Just after 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday, live in the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio in Las Vegas. The Wii includes co-host Caleb Herring, back after a rare family vacation. Caleb, for at least another year, is the last UNLV quarterback to lead them to a bowl game. Also, he is currently part of the UNLV football broadcast team and co-hosts the Tony Sanchez Show on Wednesday nights with Russ Langer on our sister station, ESPN The Leader. Also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who's also the locker room reporter for Vegas Golden Knights radio game broadcasts here on Fox Sports Radio. And behind the tripod, the intern known now and forever as The Wiz.
The Wiz.
The Wiz, man.
Doc Oz.
Wiz is pretty helpful. Been at all the events so far, helping me set up, man. Really helped me out.
He looks like Gruden right now with the Raiders visor on.
You want to look it's like kinda, Gruden right now.
Oh, yeah. He's a good man right now.
Derek Carr, right now. He is making me look bad with my prediction on Derek Carr right now. The guy is playing well, 5-4. And right now, if the season were to end today, the Raiders would be in the AFC playoffs. Pretty cool. The show's also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and we are seen on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. And you can watch on our personal pages as well. The show is live, as I mentioned, and calls are welcome. The Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
The Cowboys apparently will have a representative there. I wanted to see if you could confirm that and tell us, what do you look for at that workout?
That's not correct. We're not going to have anybody there. We'll those are taped, and we'll look at the tape if we need information there. We really like where we are with our quarterbacks. We've got some very young quarterbacks, and that's the way to, we think, to bring anything up behind Dak is to do it with young ones like we're doing, so we won't be there.
22 seconds left, and it's winding down, and one more time. McDonald takes that knee. The Rebels begin to walk out of the field from their side of the field. Over the far side, Hawaii walking out of the field, meeting in the center, and the Hawaii fans, thousands of them here on the far side, a sea of green from this side, looking out there. Celebrating, happy, as Hawaii, a greatly improved program, going to a bowl game in 2019. That's the end of the game. The final score, Hawaii 21, UNLV 7.
10 seconds now. Right side, Stone, looks to the middle. Shot off the side of the cage from Glass. Banged around the board to 10 to the zone. 4 seconds, will there be enough time for an icing? Waved off, and this game is over. Consecutive loss. Final score, Los Angeles 4, Vegas 3.
Hey, give credit where credit is due. Jerry Jones from an interview on 105.3, The Fan in Dallas, kicked that off. And what's on tap, thanks to our new title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp, with offices locally in Las Vegas and Henderson. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, Residential Bank Corp is the company to turn to for all your home financing needs. At Residential Bank Corp, we listen, you win. On tap, as you just heard, Saturday was filled with lots of losing from UNLV to the Vegas Golden Knights to Colin Kaepernick. To Alabama's quarterback.
That sucks.
A lot of losing.
That's tragic.
Yeah.
But...
and you know what? We're all over it, though. We're going to be talking about that. Joining a little later, if we can get him out of bed today, Michael Babcock of TMZ Sports. Plus, we'll talk NFL Week 11 and give you our picks of the week. The hottest guy in the room, 3 of the last 4 weeks, Caleb Herring, his first 3 wins in 3 out of 4 weeks. So maybe you want to listen to him and not the rest of us, because nobody else in here won. Hey, listen, that's what's on tap, thanks to Residential Bank Corp. If you're looking to buy a home or refinance the home you're in, choose a company you can trust at Residential Bank Corp. We listen, you win. And go ahead, Chris, hit fact this.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. Colin Kaepernick took it upon himself to move the NFL planned and scheduled combine-style workout about an hour before it was to take place. His representative, speaking for him, cites issues with a workout waiver, media availability, including allowing Kaepernick's own video crew to film it. So instead of a workout at the Falcons team facility in front of what the league said would be a group of 25 teams' representatives, Kaepernick worked out at a high school about 60 miles away in front of representatives from 8 teams. After the workout, he signed autographs for the few hundred fans that were there to see him. He didn't talk to the media, but this was the message from him.
I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people. We're out here. We're ready to play. We're ready to go anywhere. We'll be waiting to hear from Roger Goodell, the NFL, the 32 teams. We'll let you know if we hear from them. Ball's in their court. We're ready to go.
You know, I don't spend a lot of time agreeing with Stephen A. Smith. I actually like the guy, and you know, obviously he's very intelligent and very articulate, and make sure we all know that he's very articulate. But you know, I do agree with his assessment of yesterday's workout with Colin Kaepernick. This guy showed, as far as his skill set goes, one of the NFL scouts said every drop of his skill set is there from the day he walked out of college at Reno, and yet then he goes and does what he does so well and shoots himself in the foot by opening his mouth. And I mean, to sit there and rip on Roger Goodell, I mean, even Jay-Z came out and said, you know what, I wouldn't represent this guy. And that's, you know, it just, come on, Caleb, what the hell, man? What is this is really starting to be all about Colin Kaepernick, and it's seeming to starting to be, and I'm going to say this straight out, he's starting to seem to me like a narcissistic ass.
No, I will 100% agree with you, and I too saw what Stephen A. had to say in response to it on his video, and I, for the first time in a long time, really agreed with his sentiment. Not necessarily every bit of what he said, but I agreed with the sentiment that Cap is not really in it to play again at this point. And some of the actions that he's taken are really bizarre. If you're on the track and you want to get back into the NFL, you pretty much have to put whatever the quarrel was between you behind you.
Three words: shut your mouth.
Yeah, like just make it about football. You've settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. At this point, if you still want to play, that has to be history. There can be nothing more about it. That's kind of the idea about the settlement. So for you to come out immediately in your first real opportunity with the media and with NFL teams, you bring it up and basically bash the 32 teams about it. It's not that I disagree with what he's saying. I agree that he was blackballed. I agree that the NFL 3 years ago took it upon themselves to make sure that he didn't have an NFL career, even though he was worthy of it at the time. I agree with all of that. So don't get me wrong when I say this, but for 3 years later now, for that to be the tone of your message, instead of being about, you know, I came out and I performed the way I wanted to, and I think that I deserve a spot based on what I've done, based on what you've seen, I think everyone would agree. I think that should have been his message after the workout, not Roger Goodell, the 32 teams, the ball is in your court, we'll see what you... Because at this point, number one, for me, first of all, personally, I feel like what he did in that workout, I watched the whole thing, like the entire video that he posted. What he did in that workout, I feel like, honestly, there's dozens of guys who can go out and do the same thing that he did. And they don't get this chance to have teams set up at a private workout. You know how many people, outside of being blackballed and being played in the NFL, you know how many people, myself included, honestly, I'm just being completely honest here, would kill for an opportunity to have the NFL commissioner schedule a workout, private or not private, behind closed doors or not behind closed doors, so that all 32 teams have an opportunity to come watch, and then have 25 teams commit to say, I'm going to come watch you throw the ball around, and based on that, you have the potential to getting back into the NFL. You know how many people would kill to do that? And how many people would do the same thing based on, you know, just being able to complete pass, look good doing a drop back, and all that, making those throws? You know how many people would be able to and would kill to have that opportunity? So to me, he sounds ungrateful. I mean, at this point, the NFL is a privilege. Let's count that as number one. The NFL is making millions of dollars to do what you do, to play football, is a privilege. I understand his point. He was blackballed for doing something he believed in, that I believed in, I support him with. So I'm 100% behind him with that aspect of things. But for him at this point to be making it about that, it shows me that he's not really in this to play anymore. He's a martyr, and I respect him for being a martyr. He's trying to prove a point. I respect the point he's trying to prove, but it's not about playing at this point. If he wanted to play, he'd have been in the Falcons practice facility behind closed doors, working his butt off and trying to impress some scouts instead of trying to prove a point and addressing the media the way he did.
You know, there's a couple different ways, though, that you could look at that whole situation with him moving it. I don't blame him for wanting
100%.
The media, you know, because the NFL, as we said, they blackballed this guy. They did not want him in the league. So I don't blame him one bit for wanting to move it and do it in front of the media, record it, have people be able to see what you can do. Because honestly, if I'm him, I don't trust the NFL.
100%.
Now, the other aspect of that is he's had opportunities. Remember, he opted out of his deal.
No doubt about
that. With the 49ers. Now, granted, they stunk. But remember, Baltimore was looking at him to play with Joe Flacco or behind Joe Flacco. He decided, for whatever reason, he didn't want to do that. There were rumors the Broncos were going to try to sign him. That never materialized. So he's had opportunities. And yeah, he's a martyr. Like, the thing is, I don't care one way or the other what he does during the national anthem. To me, it's overblown nonsense by far-right lunatics.
Yeah.
And the other aspect of it, though, is clearly he's being a martyr for ignorance now, right? Like, he took a stand, and you know what? You can respect him. I respect
me.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And you know what? That's one aspect of this. Don't care what he does, one way or the other. I don't care if the NFL plays the national anthem. I don't care what they do. To me, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
My father was a vet. My grandfather was a vet. So it's not that I haven't been around, but
it's a big deal.
No, okay.
But it shouldn't. Depending on what the reason for. And first of all, real quickly, guys, I just want to say the word martyr. I think he wants the appearance of being a martyr, but the way he is going about it, he's not a martyr. He's a self-absorbed ass, and that's what he's turning into.
And that's what I'm getting at.
And so a martyr is somebody that, for the common good, takes one for the team. This guy's not taking one for anything but himself.
But he did initially.
I'm going to agree with Caleb, Chris, and the bottom line is this guy has an opportunity that other guys would die for. Remember Jeff Garcia was training Jamarcus Russell, and they tried to get him a workout. You know who went and saw Jamarcus Russell work out? His mother. I mean, that's who went and saw him. So this is, the NFL gives this guy this unbelievable opportunity, a showcase, and it's going to be by my rules, my way, and then I'm going to have my say afterwards. And I heard he even wore a shirt for the workout that said Kunta Kinte on it. I mean, when is this going to stop?
Come on, man.
Let's get angry about this. This is real, and it is a piss-off now. This guy is, like you said, millions of dollars he's already made in a lawsuit and playing in the league.
So here's the thing about the whole workout, and this is the problem I have. The way that he filmed the workout, the way that he got it publicized, his skills as far as him working out and being able to practice and being, you know, ready to go. He's ready to go, as he kept saying.
He got himself in shape.
He could have done that video without the drama of it.
Absolutely.
Like, if it was announced that, hey, these teams want you to work out for them and they want to be in private for whatever their reasons are, we want to do this, he could have agreed to do that and done that at that Falcons facility, and then right after, gone out to that high school and brought his own camera crew out, done the same thing with his own receivers, and put it out there. This whole time, he could have been on YouTube putting out videos if he wanted it to be out there.
The question is,
and I get the paranoia, like you said, I get the paranoia and the fear that you can't trust these guys because they clearly have blackballed you.
They have an agenda.
And they haven't, exactly.
What was the motivation behind the NFL scheduling this? Like, why didn't they do this in July?
And that's the part
when teams were opening up.
That's the part I want to get at, is because, first of all, 3 years later, it's too little too late. I think even the maturation of him as a person, like, he's older now than he was 3 years ago. I think at this point in time, most teams can legitimately say, and with good reason say, I don't want to take a chance on a guy that's this old. He might have lost a step. We didn't see him run, because that's the best part of his game. We didn't see him run a 40. We didn't see any of that. I could see a lot of teams reasonably saying, based on what I saw, I can draft somebody out of college that can do what he did.
Jerry Jones said, we're looking younger.
Use that as your excuse. As a business, as a team, as a franchise, it makes more sense at this point to go with somebody else. So at this point, I don't even know why the NFL came up with this idea. And then I also don't know why Colin Kaepernick decided to approach it the way he did. It just doesn't make sense.
I think Colin Kaepernick, yeah, he doesn't trust the NFL, but he also wanted to bring attention to him.
That's what I said. It's a narcissistic act, and it's bothersome. And the thing is, here's the thing is, 3 years later, we can look at this any way you want to. This is a great opportunity for him. And right now, if you really want to play football, is there a better opportunity to be a quarterback with a good skill set right now? There are three teams right now that need a starting quarterback desperately, and that is the Broncos, the Bucks, and the Dolphins. Desperately. Okay, you could say the Bears, you could say the Redskins, but, you know, in other teams that for sure need backups, the Redskins, is Dwayne Haskins a long-term answer? No.
No, I don't think so.
So how about the Patriots? Tom Brady is a free agent. Will he be back next year? Yeah. But his backups, Stidham, that's who's backup
Jared
is?
Stidham,
yeah, okay, so he's his backup. How about the Seahawks? Russell Wilson, Geno Smith? You don't think Colin Kaepernick is capable as Geno Smith? Or what about the Jets with Sam Darnold? You got Trevor Siemian as a backup. We've already seen what he can do.
Geno was actually kind of impressive in the preseason.
But my point is, there are opportunities right now, not only to play, but to start. He doesn't want to play. He wants to call attention to himself and use this as a springboard and money-making opportunity
for himself. And, right, like people forget, he made how much money from Nike?
A lot.
A lot.
So, you know, the thing is, it's such a, for me, it's such a confusing thing because I support what he does, right? Like, I have zero issue.
And that's the thing. I really do support his cause. I supported what he was doing in the first place. I support all of that.
What I didn't like was the socks. With pigs on them.
And the shirts and the constant messages.
Well, the socks were a little uncalled for. I don't mind the shirts necessarily, but the socks, I can, you cross the line there.
Yeah, I mean, I have cops in my family, so for me, I take it personal.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that was terrible, too, and I mean, come on, man. Again, too much time is being spent on this, which is exactly what he wants. And so I'm going to give a final word of advice, and we'll talk a little bit about UNLV football. You know what, Cullen? Take a knee permanently. All right, let's go. Let's get to let's jump over to the UNLV football because Caleb, you called the game yesterday, and you know, but even before we get started, I don't want to play a lot of this, as Chris said, it takes up too much time. But Tony Sanchez, after the press conference, this was him walking in and when he first sat down and what he had to say, and let's try and. Again, this isn't about crucifying Tony Sanchez. The guy's a good guy. I like him. I think his players like him. And I wish him nothing but the best no matter what happens at the end of this year. And I mean that with all sincerity. But you have to call out what you see and what you hear. And I was disturbed by the post-game press conference. Caleb, I don't know if you heard it. You heard his comments to Steve Cofield after the game. But this was Tony in the post-game press conference.
All right, I'll start off. I haven't had a chance to really look at this very much. Just kind of off the hoof. You know, frustrating game. Really proud of our guys. You know, they it would have been real easy for them to, you know, after that bye week and, you know, we did to come into this game and not play real hard. Our guys played hard and they strained. Again, proud of that. I thought the defensive effort was absolutely outstanding. The defensive game plan, the way the guys played, they played winning football. That's some of the best defensive football we've seen against a really explosive Hawaii team. You know, when you look at the 21 points on the board and you think, you know, seven was the offense throwing a pick six. You know, the fourth down stops, the turnovers we got early, they were critical. And going into the game, the biggest thing we had talked about after kind of, you know, looking at the last bunch of weeks was, you know, third downs and turnovers. When you look at how unsuccessful we've been again on a third downs and, you know, the lack of turnovers that we've created and some that we've given up, it's really what's kind of put us behind the eight ball in a lot of these games. You come in halftime, you know, and you've got a 7-7 ball game, and, you know, you've won in the turnover battle, but, you know, not very good on third downs, you know. And them, they executed a couple fourth downs, so I believe they were something like, I think they converted like seven of the, no, not seven, but four of the seven of the drives, so they were beating us there.
Yeah, you can turn it off. I've heard enough. And again, I just, you know, hearing words like outstanding. There wasn't a damn thing outstanding about the defense, the offense, the special teams. Yeah, they played better in the first half. I don't know what to say, man. They forced a lot of turnovers in the first half. That was kind of cool. They got lucky. They missed one opportune time with Flowers dropping that one right in his hands. But, you know, to their credit, they didn't see, you know, Hawaii didn't score on that drive. But listening to Sanchez make excuses for this team, it's bothersome at this point. I mean, you walk into the press conference, you bring a couple players in there, and you say, you know what? We missed an opportunity here. We really let one get away. There were some good moments in this game. There were some good efforts. efforts. There was a blocked field goal. Things that we can take and look at in a positive light, Caleb. But come on, man. Don't come in and say outstanding and say, I'm really proud of the effort of this team. Say, we really, no pun intended, dropped the ball today.
It's tough because I hear what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I think part of the job of head coaching is being able to put the most positive spin on it that you can. And I think Tony has done a great job of that in most situations. And I think this is one of those cases where outstanding, don't know. You can say there's a argument for the fact that your defense only gave up 14 points to a team that averages just under 38 on the season. There is
a team that's beaten two Pac-12 teams.
Oh, okay. You can say that defensively, if you want to separate the teams, you can make an argument that it wasn't forcing three turnovers in one half. You can say that that was outstanding. Whether or not they're gimmies or not, it's still hard to convert or to make those turnovers happen. So you can say that that was outstanding if you want to, if you choose it. I don't know that I would use the word outstanding in any loss, especially when those three turnovers only resulted in 7 points. So winning the turnover battle means a lot if you are scoring on offense and capitalizing on those extra possessions, but they mean nothing if you don't. So I don't know if I would characterize it as outstanding, but like you said, I think there's things to hang your hat on in the effort. The guys could have quit. They could have turned it in on the season. I think a lot of the guys, at least defensively, didn't show any quit at all. So you can be proud of those things as a coach, and it's okay to highlight those, I think, as a head coach. Like that, I have no problem with him highlighting those. I think the frustration comes with you've just heard it so much over the course of the season, like the same kind of ever positive, ever optimistic, we lost, but these things are the reason to blame. You've heard it so much that it's like, okay, well, are we ever going to fix the third down issue? What is the problem there, and why can't we convert third downs, or why can't we put the ball in the end zone? You've heard so many times that that's the reason we lost, but then where's the resolution, or where's the solution to that problem? So I think that's the frustrating part, and that's why, you know, a lot of people have kind of gotten, I'd say, maybe a little tired of it. It seems like you're a little fed up with the optimism after losses. It's almost like at this point you're just like, okay, we lost. Take it on the chin. Say whatever you got to say, but we lost the game. And you don't want to hear, you know, the optimism of why we did and how we could have done better.
I looked at Desiree Reed Francois after the game, which, you know, she helps out with the helmets.
She looks good in her red outfit.
She always looks good in a red outfit or whatever outfit she's wearing. But the point is, she was helping out with the helmets after the game, and she looked like she just ate a bad jalapeno pepper.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just see, it's like, man, this just sucks. And that's the thing. It is just, you know, there's so many things you can take from this game and say, well, they could have improved here, you know, they could have done here. The truth of the matter in this game, two things to me cost them this football game. First and foremost, I'm going to say coaching, and that's what cost. And secondly, Kenyon Oblad. I mean, the bottom line is this kid was really off. Yeah. And I don't know in a tight game if you pull the quarterback when you're hanging in there, because it's not like you're getting blown out. But this guy, I mean, the bottom line is I should go into Darren Woods Jr.'s apartment today, and he better have some flowers from Kenyon Oblad sitting on his desk, because you know, Caleb, you saw what I saw, yeah, especially on that one pass across the middle. He was triple covered, and he threw the ball behind him and nearly got him killed.
Yeah.
I mean, overthrowing players, throwing the ball behind players. It is amazing. Like Faulu on the good catch he made, it was still behind him. He had to reach back and get it. Made a really nice catch. Luckily, there was no one in front of him or he would have been laid out.
Yeah.
This can't happen on a regular basis. And when a coach to me, and again, I'm sitting here on the famous couch quarterback or couch coach, whichever you want to call me, but we're watching the game. We're all seeing the same thing. Oblad looks off today. Armani is standing there. Maybe you need to run the ball against Hawaii. Try something different. And maybe a guy like Armani right now is probably chomping at the bit saying, I need one more chance.
Or he's not. There's that. Okay, I mean, there's a possibility that Armani is not chomping at the bit to get back out there. There's a chance going into the psyche of a player that he feels disrespected, that Kenyon's getting the nod right now. There's a chance that Armani's healthy and he doesn't want to go back out there.
But you're saying he doesn't want to go back out there?
There's a possibility. I'm not accusing him at all.
Armani's grades aren't to the point where he's going to be able to transfer.
Yes, so if there's a coaching change,
Okay.
He'd be eligible to transfer
as well as everybody else on the team. You're right.
You get that year granted that exemption if your coach is fired. Right. That could be his play. I'm not saying that, but where is he going to transfer and start in college? Maybe he doesn't want to go somewhere and start. Maybe he just wants to get out of town because of all the ridicule that he went through while he was playing and playing his best and giving his best foot forward and getting the blame for the reason why the team didn't look good offensively. Maybe that, to some degree, affected him, and he's bothered by that from this community.
So Sanchez
I'm not saying it's just a Sanchez thing. I'm not saying he's envious of the football players or his teammates or anything like that. I'm saying maybe at some point you get fed up of being blamed for something that's not your fault. You get blamed for starting a fire that's in a dumpster, and it's not your fault. And you just want out. You want no part of it anymore. And some people, that they get to that point. I've personally been to that point where I got blamed for a dumpster fire. And it wasn't my fault.
I'm talking about your sophomore season.
I'm talking about that.
And I'm going to agree with you, but you came off the bench your senior season, disgruntled, unhappy, hating your coach Bobby Houck.
And it took an enormous amount of resolve to do that.
You're saying Armani doesn't have that.
I'm not saying he doesn't have it. I'm not saying this is the case.
I'm just saying it's
not necessary. It's somebody's personal journey and their struggle and whatever they're dealing with. Sometimes you don't want to deal with undue adversity. Sometimes you shouldn't have to. I shouldn't have had to do that. It shouldn't have had to have been some great story of adversity.
Bottom line is, when you do,
What are some
of the old cliches? And I'll give you two of them right now, because right now the old cliches were, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, right?
Yeah.
And the cream rises to the top. If he's the cream, that would have been his opportunity. If that's really his mental psyche is, I'm bitter and disgruntled.
I'm going to be a jerk right now. Okay. I'm going to be a millennial, and I'm going to put a spin on that old adage that you just threw out there. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. You know how you can spin that? Play with words here.
Okay.
When the going gets tough, the tough head out. They leave and get out of town.
And get going somewhere else.
Get going somewhere else.
Okay.
What if we spin it that way?
Okay. Here's what we're going to say going to break. We give nicknames to everyone. Caleb Herring is now known as the voice of reason. This is Out of Line on Fox Sports Radio.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
The Vegas Golden Knights, a little bit of a head-scratching lately by all of us, by everyone in Las Vegas, and probably by hockey experts as well all over. Nobody can really figure out what is going on paper. This is a really good hockey team, a team that can score a lot of points. A team that might be suffering a little bit on the defensive end of the ice, but they have some offensive-minded defensemen, guys like Nate Schmidt, like Shea Theodore, that can also put the puck in the net. We're wondering. They've lost 5 games in a row, Chris. They've lost 7 of their last 8 games and 8 of their last 10. What is it going to take to stop the bleeding?
Well, they need to get a couple wins together, obviously. I think that's the one thing. Now, I know you say they're a good team.
I think
they're an okay team. I know I came on this show, and I probably said it on other shows, I did not feel when the season started that they were better than the team that lost Game 7 to San Jose last year. I felt like the losses of Pierre-Edward Belmar,
Holla,
Eric Holla, although Holla didn't really play last year, I still felt like you were counting on him to be part of the team.
You saw what he was capable
yes.
of.
Yes. You saw flash.
Yes.
Of what Eric Holla can
and
do.
And he's showing that this year.
A 30-goal scorer. This team lacks depth.
Yep.
Serious depth. They clearly lack a playmaker on the blue line. And they're being exposed. Here's the other thing. Mark Stone doesn't have a point in 6 straight games. Nobody's talking about that, right? Because the argument is, well, where were you saying that when he was doing what he was doing before he went in the slump? Because that's what he was supposed to do. Now that he's not doing it, it's glaring, right? Like, it needs to be talked about that this is a guy you're paying $9.5 million a year.
That Colorado game, that giveaway to Belmar at the beginning of the game was putrid. And that is by one of the most highly paid hockey players in the National Hockey League right now.
This is your superstar player.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about the fact that he doesn't have a point in 6 straight games.
And he's played some lackadaisical hockey. He really has.
You know, I mean, and look, when things are good, obviously people don't get criticized, right? When he's got 18 points in the first 19 games or whatever it is, or whatever his numbers were before this six-game scoreless streak. But superstar players need to step up in big moments.
Absolutely.
And this team needs Mark Stone to step up in a big moment because today is a big moment. Because you're playing Calgary at home, then you have Toronto, who you just lost to 2 weeks ago, coming into the building.
And your rivals.
And then San Jose. So if you don't win today, San Jose has caught the Golden Knights. This was a team that was dead just 2 weeks ago, and everyone was joking about
it. They weren't going to make the playoffs.
Which was comical, because the team is too damn good to not have gotten better and gone on a streak. I mean, there's too much star power in San Jose. So when people were laughing about the Sharks, ha, 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 they suck, they're not going to make the playoffs, it was after, what, 10 games, people were freaking out about that? The reality is the Golden Knights, the fan base, I feel like, unfairly crushes certain guys. Like, they unfairly crush Malcolm Subban, as if it's his fault that the team doesn't play well in front of him. The team crushes Derek England. The team crushes Cody Eakin. Not the team, the fans crush Cody Eakin. Like, I don't understand that. When you are blaming a third-line center and a third-pairing defenseman for the team losing as many games as they've lost in a row, or to be playing as poorly as they've been playing, that's the fan base not wanting to accept reality that their star players aren't stepping up. You know, you can be fans of guys like Jonathan Marchessault and Mark Stone and William Karlsson. I mean, we all like those guys, but the reality is the team needs those guys to be at their best every single night. And yeah, the lack of depth is concerning, especially when you're not getting anything out of Cody Eakin, but Cody Eakin shouldn't be getting crushed by the fans because he's not producing. It's not on him that this team is losing. And it's unfair, I feel, and I mean, I want to see those guys do more, but I'm not going to crush them. I'm not going to crush John Merrill because the team plays poorly. John Merrill is not your star player. John Merrill doesn't make a ton of money for a hockey player. He's a guy who is, he's a solid NHL player, but he's not a superstar. He's not an all-star.
He developed from a guy that was regularly on the scratch list regularly on the ice, and he's earned it.
And John Merrill, Nick Holden, those guys do make mistakes.
Yeah.
That's why they are in the position that they are in financial-wise in the league. They're not your star players. Paul Stastny, where has he been the last 2 weeks? You know, and it's not that I don't like these guys. I mean, they're all good guys, and I have great conversations with them, but the reality is the fan base needs to start pointing fingers at those guys.
Well, they do, Chris, and I still think it's more or less the fan base still getting educated on the game of
hockey. Well, the thing is, a perfect example, right? Like, Malcolm Subban gets crushed because the team lost yesterday. Well, how come Marc-Andre Fleury's not getting crushed by the fans when they lose to Chicago? Right? Now, granted, it's not Fleury's fault, right? Like, he didn't...
I know what you're saying. They're playing the same in front of Subban as they are in front of Fleury, and they're losing with both players.
Yeah.
So it's not really one of their fault. It is a cumulative effort of this team.
There are 12 guys that play forward, yep. 6 guys who play defense, and 1 goalie in a game.
Yep. You gotta,
when the team loses, every single one of those guys is accountable. Not Cody Eakin alone, or not Derek England alone, or not Malcolm Subban alone. To me, the team in general is not playing well right now, as a whole. Right? Like, I talked to William Karlsson the other day. He had a goal and an assist against Chicago. And you know what? He took onus. He said, I need to be better offensively and defensively. Well, I don't know what else he could do. But for him to take the blame, you know, there's a lot of accountability. And we keep hearing this, there's 23 captains in the locker room. Well, one of them needs to step up.
Yeah, somebody needs to be a real captain. And you know, leave it at this with the Golden Knights. They start a four-game homestand this afternoon, 4 o'clock. They play the Calgary Flames, as Chris mentioned. Then the Toronto Maple Leafs, who just beat them. One of the best players in hockey on that team, a guy I really enjoy watching, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, they got a couple of good players.
They do.
And they've been underperforming, too.
They have been. And the Sharks come to town, of course, on Thursday. And then next Saturday, of course, the Edmonton Oilers always look for
you legitimately are playing four teams that could beat you.
They could all beat you and really, really go into a huge hole there. The Golden Knights, this is a game, and I think it is a very pivotal game to get off the snide, start this homestand with a win, and end this losing streak. I think it is really, really big for this team to do. I think that you may have to see Gerard Gallant mixing things up a little bit more with the lines. I know he's played around with a little bit. He needs to do that possibly a little bit more.
I'd like to see Will Carey have an opportunity on the third line.
Might not be a bad idea. He's probably playing as hard as anybody out there.
I think ideally you could move Will Carrier up to the third line and let Cody Glass center that line with Carrier and Tuck, and then move Eakin down to the fourth line and have Nosek or Reeves on the wings. I think that would be something that you could do. I like the first line of Max Pacioretty, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith. To me, that is a really good line. And Max Pacioretty is a guy who he's producing. You know, I mean, he's playing well.
No, he is.
But you need more than just Max Pacioretty. And by the way, if you're going to the game, get there really early today because the marathon is going on at the same time, and that is going to be a mess.
Interesting day today here in Las Vegas, and a big day for the Vegas Golden Knights. That, of course, nightcap. We'll talk more about them as the season goes on. I think there is some problems, and we are going to have to see some patchwork done in this for this team to make any kind of a run towards the postseason. And again, as Chris said, they're going to have to get some playmaking ability on the blue line. It's huge for this team, and the best teams in hockey and the teams that win the Stanley Cup have not just a great goaltender, but they have their defense plays well, and you've got guys like a Brett Burns or somebody like that that can make a difference, and the Knights are going to have to do that. Chris, let's hit blazing.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Blazin' is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. Again, we are out there every Monday night for Monday Night Football. And, of course, this last week we did our third Vegas Golden Knights viewing party. Gave away some tickets to today's game against the Calgary Flames. The next Vegas Golden Knights viewing party will be at the Galleria Mall, and that will be a couple days before Thanksgiving, I think a week from next Tuesday, or 2 weeks. But I don't know who's hosting that show. I'm going to be in Detroit, but I will get someone out there. It's going to be a great time. We give away a lot of really cool stuff, and we give away lower bowl tickets to the next Vegas Golden Knights home game. Really cool. Come on out and check that out. And again, tomorrow night we'll be back out at Buffalo Wild Wings for Monday Night Football. And let's start off while we're doing blazing. And Mags, I'll give it to you. Who's blazing?
Well, I'm going to go with Oklahoma football blazing. Jalen Hurts, guy who I think will win the Heisman Trophy, the third straight quarterback from Oklahoma and under Lincoln Riley to do so. They were down big yesterday to Baylor. Unbelievable comeback. They end up winning. Keep their championship hopes alive. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, Jalen Hurts, bet Nick Saban wishes he still had that guy around, huh?
No, talk about it.
A little bit. What you got?
I actually was going to go Jalen Hurts individually more so than Oklahoma, but I want to switch it and go to the Pac-12 because I bashed them. So Oregon, I guess, would be my blazing. They're on a winning streak of, I'm not sure what the winning
streak is. Utah, too.
They haven't lost yet. Utah, both Oregon and Utah are on a collision course on the Pac-12 championship. Both will be in the top 10, 6 and 7 right now, I believe. So those two teams, I think the winner of that game, hopefully in Oregon has a better chance, but I think that's my actual blazing is Oregon, the University of Oregon, they're back. Hopefully that team wins. If Oregon wins, then that Pac-12 championship and Utah has won out at that point and they're still number 7 in the rankings, I think Oregon gets into the Final Four. And I think that is huge for the Pac-12. So if they continue winning and they win out, they control their destiny, I think. I think there's an argument. I don't think there's anybody who should be opposed to Oregon getting in the top 4, especially with Tua being out now. And Bama, I don't think will be in the top 5 without him. I think the eyeball test for the committee, I think Alabama without Tua isn't the same Alabama team. So I don't think anybody argues that. I think Georgia falls out. Whoever doesn't win the SEC championship falls out. And I think Oregon winning there their conference championship slides into the top four, so they're blazing right now.
I can't disagree with that. I'm actually going to give a blazing to, and I'm shocked I'm doing this, just to the NBA in general. I am enjoying watching the NBA this year, and I mean, it's kind of cool with the parity, and I never thought I'd say this, but it's kind of cool seeing the Lakers and the Celtics back up top again. It really just brings the NBA. That's what the NBA is about. Those two teams really did revolutionize the NBA back in the early
80s. Only greatness equals greatness.
And it's hard for me because I don't like either one of these teams, as I know that you do.
Satisfied.
But I don't.
So
but,
satisfied.
But it is fun. I'm actually enjoying and finding myself watching more of the NBA. So I'm going to give the NBA a blazing. Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day, as I mentioned, and it is America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. 215 in North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. Come on out tomorrow night. Game starts at 5:15, and we will be down there giving away free wings, giving away some cool stuff, and talking about the upcoming Vegas Golden Knights watch party. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back real quickly. We've got the S&B with C, and we're going to talk to, hopefully, Mike Babcock, if we can get him on the phone. All that and more here on Out of Line Fox Sports Radio. It is time for S&B with C, the silver and black, with Caleb Herring. Raiders, Caleb, have won their last two. They had a week and a half off after they were one game under 500, now one game over 500, and now the worst team in football record-wise, the 0-9 Cincinnati Bengals come to town to play the Raiders. They got to be looking good to go 6-4.
I got
to
say, they look really good, and they're surprising you. You had your doubts. Derek Carr is playing good. Not quite MVP Derek Carr, but he's playing well, and this system looks good with him. The AFC is wide open, so I mean, the Raiders are looking good. They're going to be a winning team, it looks like, when they come to Vegas next season. Also in the news with the Raiders, just on the topic of Raiders football, you have to mention it because it was big over the weekend with the Myles Garrett helmet incident. Vontaze Burfict, who is a Raider, who's been suspended for his personal fouls and his history of unhealthy
behavior.
He
wasn't happy being compared, was he?
He was compared, and it was kind of funny to see him react so angrily, as if, he's like, I would never do such a thing like that. I don't see why the league had to suspend somebody for what happened, but I would never be that person to hit somebody with a helmet. It's pretty interesting to see a guy who's been a dirty player, but he has an argument that it was within the scope of football. He was making illegal hits that were like tackles. He never ripped somebody's helmet off and
if it was legal, he would have, trust me. Okay, I'm sorry. Murphy would rip somebody's helmet off if they made it legal in the National Football League. Listen, a good segue, Caleb, into our guest on the phone. Got him this week. My bad for not reaching out on Saturday. And Michael Babcock likes his Saturday nights in California. Who wouldn't in L.A.? But TMZ Sports, our friend of the show, Michael Babcock. And I'll bet TMZ is rolling around with this story. Myles Garrett, man. And I mean, I've watched it a bunch of times. There's no doubt in my mind Mason Rudolph did something or said something to entice him. We know that now, as he'll probably be, the NFL probably will levy a fine on him too. But Michael, I got to believe that there's not a person you know, I know, anybody knows, that wasn't just absolutely flabbergasted at what we saw last Thursday night.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that in a football game before. It was absolutely insane. It's like, you think the game's over, there's 5 seconds left, and then the craziest thing that you've ever seen happens in a football game. I think everybody's fortunate that Myles Garrett didn't hit Mason Rudolph with the crown of that helmet, or on the crown of his head, because I think he could have killed him. In fact, I heard a doctor give an interview where you swing in that 7-pound hard plastic helmet, that he could have died if he hit him with it. So
yeah, I would say a helmet's capable of breaking a head like an eggshell.
There's no doubt.
Right? It would crack a head like an eggshell. I mean, it can bust a table in two. Somebody showed that. Unbelievable.
Who's ever felt a helmet before? I mean, it's heavy. It's really hard. And we know Myles Garrett. That guy is just an absolute monster physically. So, with as hard as he could swing something, that could have been bad.
Well, Marquise Pouncey's pretty much of a monster, too. And he got his licks in.
It was bare fist, though. He wasn't swinging a helmet.
Yeah, and you know what? I think if Pouncey would have, if it would have just been the slaps and the punches, I think he would have been okay. I think when you start kicking people or down, I think that's why he got his suspension there. I thought they were a little bit hard on him, but I don't have too much of a problem with it. I think with Myles, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, it's, we suspended for the rest of the year, but I would not be just surprised at all if he gets a little bit of next year as well.
So what do you think about Vontaze Burfict's reaction? I mean, he's sitting there talking about he doesn't want his daughters to see that. He plays football. He makes quote-unquote dirty hits during the scope of a football game, but
right.
Absolutely bashing Garrett for what he did. What do you think about his stance on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit ironic, I guess, but I do think that Vontaze Burfict brings up a pretty good point in that he pushes the line a little bit in his stuff. Yeah, I think it's dirty, and we've seen too many instances to not say that he's a dirty player, but it is always sort of a football play. Maybe it's just a little late, maybe he leads with his head, but to grab somebody's helmet off their head and swing it at him, that is way beyond, in my opinion, anything that Burfict has ever done.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Because a lot of people are focusing on the actual swinging of the helmet. When you have your chin strap strapped on and somebody's violently jerking at your face mask to rip it off, that to me is like that part freaked me out the most because you can snap somebody's neck.
It's really aggressive, but I also got to say, and we'll leave this up, Jones. We've only got another minute here, and I want to ask you about Colin Kaepernick. But I'll tell you right now, the bottom line is, what is Mason Rudolph running after him without his helmet on? Once your helmet's off, you get the hell off the field and away from any other players because you're not wearing a helmet and you're on a professional football field in the National Football League. I'm sorry, man. That, to me, was insane. I understand your emotions are high, but I don't got my helmet, and Myles Garrett's a lunatic. I'm out of here.
And his
right.
defense.
Honestly, if he was wearing a suit of armor, Mason Rudolph should never try
get
to
get the hell out of there, man. So real quickly, we got about 30 seconds for you, Michael.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick, I mean, my God in heaven, I feel like after watching what he said after that private workout, I felt like I had food poisoning. I was sick to my stomach, man.
Yeah, it started at the beginning of the week. I think a lot of people were optimistic that this might actually turn into something where Colin is going to have a legitimate shot to work out in front of the NFL team.
It was as bad as his head.
He had a job, and it ended the week. Being an absolute circus with the NFL pointing fingers at Colin and vice versa. And I probably think that that's the last best chance that he'll ever get to play in the NFL. I think it now might be over with the way things went yesterday.
Yeah, I think that him and his girlfriend went into something and they switched personalities because he sounded like her talking to the media yesterday. Really, really a shame that we saw that, and especially when you hear his skill set was really good. We didn't really get to see him run, which was his bread and butter, but he looked good passing the ball, looked accurate, looked like the arm strength was there, and then his worst enemy, the enemy between the 6 inches between his ears, got in the way again. And like I said, he came off as a narcissistic ass. I'm done with him. I hope the league's done with him, and I hope this doesn't morph into another book and a bunch of more money because he doesn't deserve it after that. Really, really sad when initially he was, it seemed like he was making a statement, and as Caleb mentioned in here, almost a martyr. And now he's no martyr, man. A martyr does something for the greater good and a cause. The only cause this guy's out for is the cause called Colin Kaepernick, and that's it. And I'm convinced of that. It's sickening. And after today, he will not be allowed to be mentioned on our show anymore.
Oh, wow.
That's it. Done with him.
You're blackballing him, too?
Yeah, I am. I'm done with him. I'm done with him. Like I said, Michael, this was my advice to Colin Kaepernick, and no pun intended. Take a knee. Permanently. That's it. Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Always appreciate you, my friend. We'll get you out of bed again soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Listen, we are just about out of time, so let's fly right into NFL Week 11. Interesting week in the National Football League, moving week for a lot of teams. Fantasy football owners all over the place are winding down, getting close to the playoffs. Let's get our picks right away. Last week, of course, I just can't pick my nose with a damn back scratcher. I don't know what the hell's going on here. 4-7. I took the Chiefs, man. I thought the Chiefs would recover. They were getting Patrick Mahomes back. 6-point favorites to Tennessee. And they lose outright. Mags, now 2-9, took the Saints, who I thought was a great pick, hosting the Falcons, the most lopsided, crazy game of the week. They lose 26-9. And Caleb Herring, 3 of the last 4 weeks, he's got 3 wins after he started the season 0-7. And he picked the Vikings, which was a game I was kind of surprised you picked, and they went into Dallas and beat him. You saw something I didn't. And, of course, the Wiz is killing the guests. Picking bad games is always not a good thing. Caleb tried that a couple weeks in a row, and he takes the Giants over the Jets in the Battle of New York, and, of course, the Jets win that game. I can't say either team was at home, but kind of sickening. But, anyways, let's take our picks real quickly. I'm going to take mine first. I'm going to go with the Chiefs again. They're at L.A. playing the Chargers. They're actually at Mexico City playing the Chargers on Monday night, and I think they're going to win the game by more than 4 points. Caleb?
I'm going to go with the Colts over the Jags. I think Indy in the wide-open AFC has a chance, and I think they can pull it off. It's only two and a half points.
Mags?
I'm going to go with the Patriots. Last week, bye week killed me. No Jordan Howard for the Eagles. I think the Patriots will have revenge on their mind when they go into the link. Revenge from, of course, the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. First time they've played. Make their lay in 4. I like New England.
Yep, they're laying 4.5, actually, in Philly. And quiz, you got to get back on the winning side.
Vikings -10 over the Broncos. They're trying to position themselves as close as they can to Joe Burrow.
People like the Vikings in here. This is Out of Line. I want to thank our guest, Michael Babcock, for joining the show and the crew in here. Co-host Caleb Herring, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, and, of course, The Wiz. Spencer, as always, for his help. I'm Brian Feldman. This is Out of Line. Every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, we are right here, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. We're out. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.